Welcome everybody to this first talk of the second day. My talk will be on the CAP theorem and architectural consequences on that. True to what was just said, let me introduce myself. I work for Triagens GmbH. I've been working in software development in the various roles as a programmer, product manager, and so on. Actually, let me move that away. Oops. That's very interesting. Okay. And I am also, the role that I enjoy most is as a software architect for large systems, and I'm in this role, I'm the architect of ArangoDB, which is a open software database developed at Triagens. That aside, I'm not going to talk about ArangoDB today, but about some of the theory behind non-relational databases. The CAP theorem is at the center of many discussions. Let me first introduce the CAP theorem. The CAP theorem is about a database that is somehow distributed over multiple machines, and we also have various clients interacting with that data. So the clients are in this case, displayed as persons really entering data, and here are the nodes on which the data is stored. So a typical way would be for one of the clients to write data to that database, and then because the database is replicated, is distributed, the data needs to be replicated to the second node, so that it can be read by the second client. And that actually is already what the availability in consistency, availability and partition tolerance is all about. The availability says nothing more that something that this client writes is visible to this other client. He can see this result of that write. Maybe not immediately, and there are several various ways to deal with that, but eventually he must see that. So that's availability. So it's not something about the database is up even when nodes are failing or something. It's just the property that the result of a write is available and is visible to another client. And consistency in that context means that this other client is able to read the actual data, so that those two clients have a consistent view of the database. What the one writes, the other can read. It is important to distinguish that from the concept of consistency as it is in ACID. In ACID, consistency means something different. It means that the data stored in the database is in itself consistent is valid according to all the constraints given for this database. But here in this context, it means that at any given time, the two clients have a consistent view of the data, that is, they see the same data. Okay, let me just go back because I said something or missed something here. Availability in that context actually means something more than what I just said. It also means that it is possible for each client to perform this action. So it is possible for this client to actually write to the data without getting an error code or without being informed that the database is not available. And it is possible for the other client to read the data. likewise without getting a failure code or without being informed that the database is not available. So available means you can actually perform all the operations that you want to perform. You can write and you can read from the database. And again, to repeat, consistency means that one client sees what the other client has written. So far, so easy. So what is partition tolerance then about? Well, partition tolerance talks about partitions, and partitions in that sense means that the database, which is distributed over several nodes, is a distributed database. And the problem is that the communication between those nodes has failed. In that sense, we're talking about the set of nodes being partitioned because they can no longer talk to each other. If you're from a graph theory background, you will understand that this is exactly a graph partitioning. This obviously gives us a problem because, as we have shown in the first slide, we need to replicate the data between the two nodes in order for the database to work. One way this is often also described is as a split brain. In the sense that we have two parts in our brain and there is a medical condition where the communication between those two parts is does not work correctly, and then you have a split brain with the two halves no longer communicating. And the same thing happens here. You have the two halves of your database, your brain, and you have the split brain condition. So that is what a partition is about, and partition tolerance now means that the database continues to work when a partition happens. And the CAP theorem then says you can actually only have two of the three properties. Okay? You can either always have consistency, that is, always do the two clients, blue and black, see the same data and say availability, and but then you're no longer partition tolerant. Or you can have consistency and tolerance to network partitions, or you can have availability and tolerance to network partitions, but you can't have all three. And I come to the discussion of what those three conditions mean back in a short while. Anyhow, this theorem was first introduced by Eric Brewer in his keynote about 13 years ago, actually, which was called Towards Robust Distributed Systems, on a conference actually dedicated exactly to this topic, namely distributed systems. And over the time, this was criticized in many, many articles and blog entries by many people. Let's see what there's just a small sample of that by Mike Stonebreaker, for example. He is well known. He is the designer of what is now Postgres, he criticized it. Somebody said, well, you can't actually sacrifice partition tolerance and so on. That actually caused Eric Brewer to say, well, I need to update the CAP theorem paper. Okay, let's go to the three possibilities and say and look at what this actually means and also look at how it was criticized. If we go back, one way to interpret that is you can have consistency and partition tolerance. What that does that mean? Well, it means that in this system, you have partition tolerance, that is, you're willing to tolerate that partitions happen. And when partitions happen, you want the database to still be consistent. And what you give up is the availability. So in that case, what you do is you say, okay, a partition happened. Now I'm no longer going to accept any writes or to the database. If no writes happen while the database is partitioned, then obviously you cannot enter an inconsistent state because it was consistent before the partition happened. Now the partition has happened and now you no longer accept writes, and so you stay in that consistent situation with the database until finally the partition is resolved and the two parts of your brain can talk to each other again, and then you can start to accept writes again. Maybe you even reduce the availability further, but failing on writes or no longer accepting writes is the basic approach in that case. And basically, the way that this was read and looked at in all those papers criticizing the CAP theorem was much more severe than that. Basically said, if anything goes wrong at all, then immediately stop and do nothing at all. Now, there are different things that can go wrong with a database, and a partition failure is only one of those things. Much more often, though, what you have is a node failure. And a node failure where, say, one of your servers here, or say you have 16 servers and one of your 16 servers goes down, is not a partition failure. You don't have a problem with inconsistency in that case, because a node that goes down cannot give you a wrong result. Okay, so obviously that is a quite different failure condition. But the critics read CP as, if anything goes wrong, then stop accepting any operation at all. And they claim that this is not necessary, that a database can continue to operate. And of course this is true, and this critic can be rejected and can be is not valid, because you can still accept some operations, read operations and so on. It also applies only to partitions and not to other failure conditions of the database. And more, what you can do is you can restrict the operations that you accept to some partitions. So a common case is, for example, that you have, say, three servers, and then if a partition happens, you will have a partition with two servers in it and another partition with one server in it. And you can say, well, at least I continue to work in the partition that has three servers in it. Two servers in it. That partition is often called, or is said to have, the quorum, and you can continue to work in that part of your database. So what happens and what is possible in the CP case is you have to stop the general availability, but a restricted form of availability is still possible in a part of your database. Okay, let's look at the next case. That is CA. What does that mean? Well, CA means you accept partitions. So you accept that partitions happen. And if a partition happen, sorry, did I really meant CA? No, sorry, I'm totally confusing myself and you too. What should be there is AP, availability and persistent tolerance. Very sorry about that. So we're saying P, we accept partitions, and we want to stay available. That is, when a partition happens, we want to have general availability. What that means, of course, is that we accept writes here and reads here and writes here and reads here, but we can no longer replicate those writes and reads and those data sets between those two partitions. So obviously what happens in that case is that we are no longer consistent. We're writing something here, we cannot replicate it here, so whatever this client reads here is an older version of the data. He cannot see the new version, the updated version here. So he sees something that is not consistent with what was written here. So that is what availability and partition tolerance is all about. Something that is interesting to note here is that availability and partition tolerance is something that is important to shops like, for example, Amazon. For them, it is very important that their database is available all the time. It is obviously a distributed database, Amazon working all over the world, and they want to stay available even in the case of a partition, and they sort of deal with the inconsistencies afterwards. So for example, it might be that they have an item that is in stock only once, and the inconsistency that happens is that two customers during a partition both buy that item, and because they have a partition, they can no longer see that they basically oversold this item, and the way they deal with that afterwards is basically sending a letter to one of the customers saying, we are very sorry you bought this item, but we can no longer deliver that. Please accept our apologies and maybe even a small bonus or something like that. So they do allow their database to enter an inconsistent state and basically deal with the consequences later on, because it's so important for them that they are and stay available. So, but the way this AP was basically interpreted was that the system gives up all the ACID guarantees and semantics that we know and love from the relational database. And at this point, what ACID, let me just say and remind you what ACID really means. It means that the operations that we perform happen atomically, so they every transaction happens as one thing which is not partly applied. It means that a transaction will transform the database from a consistent state to another consistent state. And consistency here, I already hinted at that, means not that different clients read the same data, but this consistency means that the database afterward fulfills all the constraints, all the foreign key constraints, all the uniqueness constraints that you have on your data. Okay, so basically, the consistency here means that the database afterwards is valid according to uniqueness. So if you try to write a data set that will invalidate, then this write will not be allowed to succeed. And basically, this consistency together with that atomicity is if you have a transaction, and in that transaction you have one operation which would invalidate this constraint, then the entire transaction is rolled back and no effect of that transaction is allowed to happen at all. The isolation and means that various transactions basically happen as if they were happening sequentially, one after the other, even if they are happening at the same time. So they are isolated from one another and they don't see partial results. And the durability here means when I write something to the database, oh wow, it actually stays in the database and won't vanish afterwards. So that's that. So those are semantics. Those are semantics that no SQL databases partly give up. But it's not true, as the critics claimed, that they give up all the ASIC properties. Certainly they don't give up the durability, whether or not they give up the other properties is actually different between some of the databases. But truth to tell, Brewer himself sort of muddled that issue, because he introduced something called BASE, which is basic availability, and I forget what the rest was. It's a very bad acronym, but it was said to be something that gives you or that is opposed to ACID and gives you other semantics. Basic availability, soft, thank you, state, eventually consistency. Okay, so that's the E4. The way to deal with this critic is basically to look at the issue a little bit closer and say what you have is, we already talked about, somehow to balance between availability and consistency, and talk about how you choose that in the case of a partition. So in the case of a partition, are we availability or are we consistent? And else, in the normal state, do we favor low latency or consistency? Again, there is a trade-off. If you want low latency, you can have it. If you want consistency, you have to be sure that all your changes that happen in another place in your distributed database have been replicated through all this database, and that costs you some of the low latency. So you can basically, instead of talking about ACID, talk about the spectrum that you have here, say a database that is, in the case of a partition, consistent and otherwise consistent, so that would be PC, EC, or something that is very common is something like, for example, in the case of the Amazon database, that is PA, EL. So in the case of the partitions, it stays available, and otherwise it tries to favor low latency. And the third case, and now it's actually true, is the case CA, and that was criticized as you cannot actually choose to have no partitions. Partitions are just a fact, and they happen, and you cannot choose not to have partitions. Well, yes, in a theoretical sense, that is true. In a practical sense, you maybe can choose not to have partitions. Say, if your cluster is very small and all your clients are connected through, and you have just one switch, and that switch connects both your nodes of the database and all the clients to those database nodes. So if we look at the picture if basically this, this, and this is all implemented by a single switch, then a failure in the network will take your database out completely. The clients cannot talk to any node, and there is no real partition. So if you have a setup like that, then bad things may happen and the network may fail, but in a certain sense, it cannot happen that you have a partition. And of course, that probably requires that you are in one data center, and as I said, they are connected through one switch. But it is true that if your nodes are distributed over many locations or several data centers, then you really have to think about partitions, and you cannot choose not to have partitions. If we look at that in a in a slightly more way, precise way, what Brewer does in his updated paper, what you have is a normal mode. Then you enter a partition mode, and basically those streams are now the different parts of your database, the split brain parts, and you have here the operations that happen, and then you have then a partition recovery, and you enter the normal mode. So that's the general situation. What you then have to deal with is you have to say, well, how do I detect the partitions? And that happens when one node tries to replicate the result of his operation to another node and cannot do so if that times out. And at that time, in that moment, the node must make a decision and must either go ahead with the operation, and that may give up consistency because he cannot replicate the information, or cancel the operation and say, no, I cannot accept that operation right now. And that will reduce the availability, obviously. There are several options that you can have to install, for example, watchdogs, which are help you to distinguish between the various failure nodes, for example, failure node of a node failing from a true partition. And also heartbeats are an important measure there that help you unbalanced situations where one side of your database has detected that a partition has happened and the other has not yet detected that. Then when you have the partition, you can then place restrictions, and you have several options there. It's not just a black and white or a simple case as the original CAP theorem implied. The restrictions that you can now have is that you restrict yourself on the nodes that can accept operations. The standard mechanism there is only to accept operations in the larger part. You can restrict on the data on which a client can operate. For example, you can say that the data sort of belongs to a certain node and accept write operations to the data which belongs to the node, fuse changes for other data. For example, in the case of Amazon, if you imagine that you have a data center in Europe and you have a data center in America, and there you have some shopping carts which belong to customers in America, and in the case of a partitions, the American data center will accept changes to shopping carts for people in America, and the European data center will accept changes to the shopping carts for people living in Europe, but not the sort of operations. And then you will probably accept 99% of your write operations and only refuse a small a subset of them. But of course, in the case of keeping inventory of how many items do I still have, that sort of requires you to have a single point of truth, and so you have problems with that. You can restrict which operations you allow. Maybe you allow only read operations and no write operations. You can restrict or change the semantics in that case. Maybe you delay the commit and say, well, yes, I sort of accepted your write, but not really, and only later will I tell you whether I truly accepted that, which is a pain for the developer using that, because in your program you still don't know whether that was accepted or not, but it's a possible answer from the database. And you can have, of course, any combination of those restrictions, saying I allow writes on my data with an immediate commit and writes on other data with a delayed commit or an asynchronous failure or something like that. And it's also possible, of course, to do so with a human intervention, so that a human can look at the situation and decide whether this is a short-term partition that will go away in a couple of seconds, or whether this is a long-term partition that will take days to resolve. After the partition, what you can do is then you have again several options, and you must now recover from your split brain. And you have, for example, merging strategies to bring together the various inconsistent data. The simplest case here is that is called last writer wins. And that means, of course, you have different versions and you just accept the last write. It is surprising how often this will give you something sensible, but of course not always. There are, and that's more in the theoretical approach, there are ways to look at the operators that you allow and mathematically say we're talking about commutative operators, so operators where the order does not matter. You can either do this and that, or you can do that and this and get the same result. And then you can build a lattice of such operations and sort of, in many, many cases, find out what should be really done and how the merged data should look after the recovery. And of course, another way is to say it is application controlled. That is, the application looks at the several versions of the data that it receives and then decides how to merge that. With the implied idea that the application has much more knowledge of what the data really means and can make a sensible decision of what a valid merge is. One way, which is not so much a merging strategy, but also an option, is to do that opportunistic, that is at read time. So when you read the data, you see, oh, I have two versions of the data, and now I'm going to merge that. One problem that you have there, or one thing that you also need to do in the recovery, is fix invariance if you have. For example, if you have a uniqueness constraint, certain table or collection and it's in your different parts of your brain that uniqueness would be violated when you merge this, then you have to deal with that. Basically, the merging strategies tell you how to do with two versions of one data set, and the fixed invariance is the case where you have two data sets that, when you bring them together, create a problem, and you need to deal with that problem and fix that, maybe by delayed failing one of the operations. Something that comes up in this case is the so-called eventual consistency, and it's important here that the eventual is the English eventual and not the German eventuell. And so eventual consistency means that all your data is eventuell oder irgendwann mal replicated to another node. What it really means is that the system has the property that it will heal itself so that all by itself after a partition, during the partition recovery, it will converge to a consistent state. This is quite a remarkable property if you have, and you will know so if you have, say, were responsible for a MySQL cluster and replicated between various nodes, and then you had a partition and afterwards tried to get back to a consistent state. The MySQL replication was not eventually consistent and did not heal itself. So this is a very powerful and important property. Ways to deal with that, and I'm not going into that, then are Merkle hash trees and something called hinted handoff. So let's look at massively distributed systems. We're talking here about systems that store so much data that you need just hundreds of nodes, say, just to store that data. They are not very common, but they do exist, and they receive a lot of publicity because they do exist at the at some of the most well-known companies. Amazon has for storing shopping carts and inventories and stuff like that, a massively distributed system. Google does, Facebook and Twitter are examples. If you have a massively distributed systems, then there are some consequences that you'll have to keep in mind. One is if the number of nodes is so large and thus also the number of interconnects is so large, then failures are a given. They are not something that happens once in a lifetime or once every year, but they happen constantly. Constantly you have nodes that will die, you will have network conditions, connections dying, and even worse, you will have network routes flapping, that is, packets which are connections which sort of don't work reliable, but because of that. And also there you have the issue by network route flapping that that, for example, you can send a packet one way but don't receive the answer on the way back because something in your routing table is a problem. And of course, if you have a massively distributed systems, then your partitions can be huge. We're not talking about, well, two systems in that part and one system in that part. We're talking about 100 systems in that part and 100 systems in that part. And then your partition detection becomes a problem because the number of possible failure modes is huge. It's not just this one connection could go down and I just have to watch that, but there are so many cases that the number is very huge. And so finding out what is really the failure mode and having every system, every node in your distributed system know what is the failure mode is impossible or next to impossible. And so one thing that you must do is you must always work under the worst case assumptions. So if you enter, so that was basically the partition detection. Remember I said we have three phases: partition detection, partition mode, and partition recovery. So partition detection in a massively distributed system is very, very difficult because it's so difficult to find out what really happened. When the partition mode happens, then restricting the operation to nodes with a quorum is impossible or very difficult. And that is simply because it's so difficult to find out what the quorum is, and also because you will basically, if you do that, keep a large part of your system from operating. And it's also very difficult to restrict the operations to read-only, basically because you cannot find out fast enough that you have to switch to read-only. So basically what you need to do is to restrict your operation semantics. That is difficult, but it is possible. And basically one way the Amazon database does that is to allow for different versions to and inconsistency to happen. Something that is possible and sometimes necessary is to distinguish between your own data that really belongs to that node, and borrowed data, and distinguish or have different restrictions for the own data and the borrowed data. And then we come to the third phase, which is the partition recovery. That really must happen fully automatically, because you fail so often and have so many different failure modes, you really must have that happen automatically. You must, in that case, merge the different states that you have automatically and reach eventual consistency, that is, reach consistent automatically, and you must also fix invariants if you have them. One of the architectural consequences that follow from them is that basically in such a system you cannot have complex operations or only local complex operations. So with complex operations that basically implies stuff like aggregating your data or having joins or something like that, where you really need to bring together information from the various parts. Basically, you can only allow for simple operations, like in a key value store, where you write data to one object and read data from one object, and that's all that's allowed. The only way you can sort of allow for a little bit more is to allow local complex operations, that is, guarantee that some data will stay on the same server, on the same node in your distributed systems, and then allow complex operations over those subsets. That is something that Amazon does with their database as a service. So if we look at that, we also see that if you have a system that's designed that way, then you have nodes failing often. So you not only have the problem of partitions, but nodes fail often. Nodes are added regularly. You have hundreds of nodes, and you realize that the demand for that database has grown. And so you need to add 5 new nodes or something like that. And because you do that over the time, your nodes are not homogeneous. Some will be more powerful than others. And one of the consequences of that is that the distribution and redistribution of your data must be fully automatic. If you constantly lose servers and add new servers, you cannot distribute and redistribute your data with an admin hacking or something like that. It must happen automatically. The way to do that is something called consistent hashing, which will use a hash key to do that. And again, the consequences there is you cannot have complex operations, you cannot have scans over large parts of your data because it's so distributed, and you really don't have a meaningful way. Basically, it's hashed all over the place. It's not distributed in any way that fits to your scans. You can have no non-trivial join or operations that require multiple indices. So many, many consequences, many restrictions that apply to such massively distributed systems. And so let me add at this place, and the marvel is not that those distributed systems behave very well or allow complex operations. They don't. The marvel is that they work at all, and they do work at all. So I just want to close by giving you a sort of try to give you a visual display or metaphor for what I have in mind. Basically, the non-relational databases, the way I see them, come in two islands. One is the island of where your data is analyzed, and you have the MapReduce and Hadoop on this island, and the column-oriented stores on this island. And you have the other island where you have basically centrally the document stores, you have graph stores, you have complex queries, you may have complex operations or operations on complex structures, and you have key-value stores. Basically, they are all reasonably connected, but you sort of have off that island, loosely hanging onto that island, the massively distributed systems. They are sort of, yes, they are connected because they are sort of a key value store, but they are only weakly connected, and you will basically never see a database that is massively distributed and also a graph store or massively distributed and allow complex queries. They are sort of opposed. So with that, thank you very much for your patience and being here at such an early time on the Sunday. Thank you.